This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Books Uncovered, an exciting conversation about books and literary events, brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
I'm Holly.
And I'm Bella.
Over the next half hour, we'll dive into themes ranging from romance to quirky book blurbs, all discovered within the depths of the Athenaeum Library. Kia ora, welcome.
Kia ora.
Everyone's having a good Saturday. I hope it's not raining anymore.
Please let it not be raining anymore.
Yeah, it's been raining for a biblical amount of days, I think.
It's too much.
Yep. So today we're having a conversation about a couple of books and their works that have been translated from one language into another. And obviously that language that's been translated into is English because we've read them.
Yes.
Unless,
sadly, I do not know any other languages.
No, neither. Not ever been very good in that department,
no.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Something I would like to change, but...
Yeah, I find it hard... Because I'm dyslexic, and if I was to learn a language, I'd have to have full immersion in that language, as opposed to just reading and learning in that way.
Maybe if you move somewhere.
Yeah, although in saying that, when I lived briefly in Berlin, which is where the book I'm going to talk about is set, I tried to speak in German, and people were like, why are you speaking German? I'll speak in English with you.
So, true. Like a lot of the European countries, it's just... mostly everyone speaks it.
Yeah.
Except France.
I was going to say, except France. So what have you brought in today?
I read this week, it's called The Book of Disappearance by Ibtizam Azim and translated by Sinan Antun. So this was on the International Booker Prize long list, which is how it came across my desk.
For this year?
Yeah, this year's one. Yeah. So the author, Ibtizam, is a Palestinian novelist, short story writer and journalist who is based in New York. This book actually came out in 2014 in Arabic, and it was originally translated into English in 2019 in the US, but it was recently re-edited and re-released in the UK, which is how it was able to be in the Booker Prize this year.
By a different translator?
Yeah, by, I think the same translator. Yeah, but it's a new publisher and other stories who have lovely covers, just have to say. as a side note. So this book is old, but sadly and unsurprisingly continues to be very relevant today with the ongoing genocide. So... this book is a speculative novel which centres around the disappearance one day of all Palestinians from their homeland. So, yeah, and then it's in the 48 hours that ensue after that, the author really dives into familial histories and how memory and trauma is transmitted and then imagines how the Israeli society would respond to such an event of all the Palestinians suddenly disappearing.
So they just vanish.
Yeah, they just vanish.
Okay.
When I heard the premise of this novel, I was wondering, is it productive to imagine a Palestine without Palestinians? And like a novel built around the wish fulfillment of the Zionist project, I was very skeptical. Mm. Obviously less so, given that it was written by a Palestinian author. But my cynicism was very thoroughly thwarted, which I was happy about. This book really unravels a lot of myths surrounding the Israeli occupation of Palestine, especially the myth of liberal Zionism. The book really shows that concept is just a part of the colonial ideology that has ripped Palestinians from their home and that continues the Nakba today. It's an ongoing project. Mm-hmm. I really loved this book. I thought it was incredibly effective and powerful and really moving. And it's told from two perspectives. One is Ala, who is a Palestinian whose grandmother was in Jaffa in 1948, so lived through the Nakba. And then the other point of view is Ariel, who's a Israeli journalist and liberal Zionist who's friends with Allah, who has obviously disappeared. So you're sort of hearing his point of view through his diary that Ariel finds. So it sort of seemed at first that it was just grappling with that basic question of how would the settler colonial society of Israel deal with the sudden disappearance of the other, which kind of seems like their whole identity is based around the other and the enemy.
Yeah.
I think it went a lot further than I thought it would and really recentered the narratives of marginalised Palestinian people. And I thought it was, I really liked how it talked about like the Nakba and like the Allah's memories of his grandmother who had passed. That's like the first bit of the book was you're reading this letter that he wrote about his grandmother passing. And it's just, oh, it was so moving. Like, yeah. Oh, kind of out of breath. This book made me breathless.
Yeah.
And I really liked Ariel as a character. Well, I didn't like him, but I thought he was a really, really excellent at functioning to dismantle liberal Zionism, just in the way he was crafted and how he moved through the world. You kind of see that that entire concept is a myth and can't exist.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really recommend it. It's a really important book. And, yeah, I hope everyone reads it.
It's fantastic that they've, done a new issue of it and that it, because, you know, it's a very important book to be reading, especially at the moment.
Yeah. Which I think probably
prompted that somewhat.
Prompted that,
perhaps. Yeah. Yeah. And so that's on the long list for this year's International Book Award. Okay.
Yeah.
So when does that get announced?
It's been announced. It didn't make it to the shortlist, but I really liked it. I liked it more than other books I've read from the shortlist.
Often the way.
Yeah. So I would highly recommend it.
Oh, cool. Great.
Well, what have you been reading?
Well, I picked up a book called Kairos by Jenny Erfenbeck, and that actually won the 2024 International Book Prize. We don't only just read long lists and shortlisted prize people, I swear. So she's a German writer and opera director, and she won the 2015 Independent Foreign Fiction Prize for The End of Days, which I was like, is that a film? It is a film, but it's not the same thing.
Oh.
And then obviously won this. So she was born in East Berlin and had a 2-year apprenticeship in bookbinding and worked in a theatre as a wardrobe supervisor, which is quite similar to the main protagonist in this book. Kairos is from an ancient Greek word meaning the right or critical moment. And it's translated, because we're talking about translated text, by a man called Michael Hoffman, who's a German-born poet, translator and critic, and he moved to the UK and studied there in the 1960s and has translated lots of work, including works by Franz Kafka and Joseph Roth. And, yeah, we were just talking before we went on air about whether people seek out books that are translated by certain people. Because that must be a thing.
Probably do. I know of it specifically in relation to like Greek texts. There's this few translators.
Exactly.
Like Emily Wilson, I think, is very popular. But yeah, I'm not, this is a sort of area I'm just getting into really, so.
Yeah, I'm not overly familiar with it. I always had that word of caution of not reading translated texts on Kindles because, you don't know who's translating it.
Yeah, and it's such an important, because you have to like sort of capture what it's trying to say, which you can't do from a direct translation, I feel.
The kind of essence.
Because some things can't be translated, so you have to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like some certain
rework it,
sayings.
So, yeah.
Especially if they're specific to that language. The Guardian calls this book an elegant translation. So it tells the story of a doomed and increasingly toxic age gap relationship set in the backdrop of the collapse of the GDR, with the two lovers seemingly embodying the East Germany's crushed idealism. So the GDR is, for if anyone doesn't know, is the German Democratic Republic, and it was formed shortly after World War II ended, and ended in 1990, and which was also when the Berlin Wall came down. Mm. So these characters are living in East Berlin, and it's set in 1986. So yeah, the two main protagonists are Katerina, who's 19, and Hans, who's 56. When I found that out, I was like, oh God,
it's a big gap.
Yeah, and like quite a Lolita vibe from the get-go, right?
Yeah.
So these characters, they meet in East Berlin, yeah, as I said, 1986. After noticing each other on public transport, they both get off at the same stop and he follows her, which immediately made me go warning bells. But she's encouraging this, and then they get a coffee together, then they end up back at his apartment where he lives with his wife of 20-something years and their son, who's 14, who both aren't home at that time and place, and they immediately go to bed together, and so the love story begins, and it's quite a, like, you know, it's meant to be, it's sort of written in this very romantic way. They immediately, oh wait, maybe I should not jump ahead. So yeah, I found it quite hard to get past the generational gap between them, because obviously it reminds me of Lolita, and I had to keep reminding myself that this was actually written by a woman. So I had to kind of put my trust in her hands a wee bit to go, okay, this can't get too messed up. Surely it's written in 2024. And yeah, anyway, so Hans is a supposedly successful author who we sort of later find out is quite financially reliant on his wife, doesn't make some sense. And their relationship is quite, like, he explains a lot and teaches Katerina about music and culture. Well, you know, in some, I guess, little reviews, they're like, you know, they shared the same interests. It's like he's very much sort of showing her the world and then looking at her very, like, innocent face at how she's receiving all this information. Mm. But sometimes it does have lends to the question of, like, who's taking advantage of who. We learn that Hans was part of the Nazi youth kid kind of club, and that it kind of goes further into that, which is, for me, what I found was more interesting is talking about what was actually happening during that era.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's an interesting scene where Katerina goes to visit Budapest with a school friend, and then she also goes to see her grandmother in the West and has to get special permission to go and do so, and goes shopping and visits a sex shop and is absolutely disgusted by the sex shop. but, yeah, it's kind of an allegory of the old making way for the new. As their relationship flourishes, it also starts to dwindle as the story heads further and further towards the end of the GDR era. Yeah, it's written in the present tense, which I had to sort of look up. I was like, oh, okay, the present tense, because you get encouraged not to write in the present tense. It's a very difficult skill to pull off, but she does it really, really well.
I can't even think of what that...
It's like it's happening right now. There's no...
Okay.
Yeah, back then or in the future. It's all in the moment. Which kind of translates quite well to, like, the relationships itself. So it adds to, like, the intensity of the relationship and mirroring this desire to hold on to every single moment they have together. Like, they make all these weird routines together, and even at some point they reenact their first meeting and things like that. Yeah, yeah, it's this kind of, I want to say, like, French movie type romance stuff.
I'm getting that vibe.
Yeah, which I really struggled to care about, but it is written really beautifully. It says it fuses the personal and the political, and there are some really beautiful lines, which, thinking about translation, just how it works. I had taken a photo of one, but I'd lost it. But one is, if there weren't waves that washed one person ashore and someone else to see... I think, yeah, it's quite full of that kind of beautiful imagery. And, yeah, it's not a pleasure to read, but it's interesting to see the perspective of these characters in this time. However, yeah, it's still a love story and just, yeah.
Interesting. That kind of makes you want to read it, because I was, like, when I first heard the premise, I was like, no, I don't like reading those sorts of books. Or books on that subject, sorry.
It's yeah.
Probably a very broad, different sorts of books that cover that. But the stuff about the history of it makes it sound a lot more appealing.
Yeah, but I feel like it could have more of that. And to be honest, I haven't finished. I'm like over halfway through and, yeah, it's like it's about to change. I sense that. So I'm like, do I keep reading? But I'm starting to like Katerina. She's just turned 20 and she's starting to come out a bit more as herself, so I'm sort of interested to see what happens.
Probably lead to more interesting things happening.
Yeah, but then I'm like, it's a lot of slog to get through to get to that point.
Yeah.
In a way. So. Yeah. but anyway, yeah, so that was Kairos by Jenny Erfenbeck.
Okay, that like maybe I'm not going to say I will read it because I have like 5,000 books on my TBR, but it made it not out of the I will never read that pile.
Yeah, because you're kind of like, why is this story being written?
Yeah, she obviously had something to say.
Yeah, and it was quite shocking because at first it wasn't, I mean, I hope I'm not really revealing anything, but it was like, okay, she's 19 and he's married, but like how old is he exactly? At one point you're like, okay, he's 10 years older than her father. And the parents know about the relationship too. That's also what's quite odd.
Oh, that isn't.
Yeah.
Yucky.
So what else have you got there?
I read This Isn't Going to Defeat Our Only Reading Off the Shortlist Longlist Allegations, as it is also off the international shortlist for this year. This was Under the Eye of the Big Bird by Hiromi Kawakami and translated by Asa Yoneda. I thought it was a really fascinating read. I can't tell if it's short stories that are interconnected or if it's just chapters with titles. So this is set in a world where humanity is nearing extinction and humans have reformed into small societies across the globe to survive.
Like this is a trend with, you love these kind of stories, eh? It's like the world has ended.
And there's also mysterious and potentially malevolent forces guiding them.
Wonderful.
I found the first 200 pages of this book was so confusing because you're just dropped into this world with no explanation. There's no context. Nothing makes sense. It's just these random abstract speculation and scenarios. So you're kind of like, I have no idea what's happening. The prose is really nice. So I enjoyed reading it, but I was like, I don't know who any of these characters are or like what the hell's going on. And then when I wouldn't have enjoyed it so much if the ending wasn't so good because it really does tie it all up really nicely with a bow where you're like, you're reading the end and you're like, oh my God, that's why all of that stuff happened. That's, you know, you sort of, everything comes into context and you're like, oh, well, that's really satisfying. But I feel like this is a book, I can't say that I really enjoyed it on first read, but I think to reread it would be really rewarding knowing what you know at the end, which is quite an interesting way to write a book. But it's like, I do want to reread it, which usually I don't want to reread a book like just after I've read it. It's only like my very favourite books. It's a challenge, I will say that.
And it's kind of a lot to ask from a reader in a way, you know, that you haven't lost them by.
Yeah, it does really like, I would recommend it. Probably you'd have to be into speculative fiction or, I don't know, weird Japanese writers, which is its own genre. Yeah. But the ending is satisfying enough to make up for the first bit where you're like, what the hell? And I was like, this is a weird one to be nominated just because it is so like, what is going on? And then I read that the judges all have to read the book 3 times, each of the books. Well, that makes sense because they've read it and they know they can go back in and sort of see all the Easter eggs and like, things throughout the first bit that makes sense once you know.
3 times.
Yeah, they do.
Gosh.
It's quite interesting.
Yeah.
It's a lot of times to read.
I wonder if they skim read.
you'd have to, surely.
Yeah.
At least one. There's like one that they skim, one of the reads.
You're
like,
and
it's like Kath and Kim's speed reading.
Yeah.
I did like it.
Okay.
Sometimes it felt like more trouble than it was worth, but in the end I did enjoy it. And if you like, sci-fi, weird little reads, I think you should give it a go.
So do you often, like if you're not enjoying a book, will you still read it till the end?
Mostly I will.
Okay.
If it's like a romance that I'm not enjoying, sometimes I'll hate read it, but usually I'll be like, this sucks, I could read
more
one that's like slightly better.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. But if it's one that's, I was intrigued by this one because I was like, well, obviously it's, people like it and it's obviously done something right to be nominated for this award. So I was like, yeah, that's what made me keep reading.
I guess it was the same for me with Kairos, because usually, to be quite honest, if a book hasn't got me after 100 pages, then I will move on with something else.
Which is so fair, because there's so many books to read or other things to do.
But I got to the 100 pages and was like, okay, I'll just keep reading a little bit more, and then,
Yeah, I think as well, this one sort of being sci-fi-y, I've read a few books where at the start you're kind of just dropped into this entirely new world and you're like, I have no idea what's going on. And the few ones that I've read like that in the last year have really been super rewarding. So yeah, that was kind of pushed me through. I was like, hopefully there'll be something worth it at the end.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's good to know. Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to read next. And it's always an interesting thing of like how to choose the next book, because obviously there's piles of books everywhere.
Yeah.
At my work, at the Athenaeum, which is who brings you this lovely radio show. And yeah, at home, and then yeah.
Yeah, I've got so many books. I've got so many, mostly all the books at home that I've brought I haven't read, because it's like I buy a book and it just like goes on the shelf to die, because I'm like, my brain's like, well, I have it now, I can read it anytime.
So, and then there's another lockdown. I was just thinking it'd be interesting if we do have regular listeners out there, Danica and Robin and
Lizzie Francis, shout out.
Yay. Maybe some of our regular listeners could come up with some themes for us.
Yeah,
you like, tell you us need a to book. Read this. That would be quite an interesting approach, because then it's not one that we're picking. But yeah, it's funny, I feel like our last couple of shows we have been picking prize nominated long listed authors, but I think that's probably just because of the time of year it is.
Yeah, so we're all like, they're all getting announced around now, most of them, and I think I don't know when the Booker Prize will be, but yeah.
Oh,
Women's Prize is announced on this Thursday, so when you're hearing this, it will have been announced.
I don't know any of them offhand.
I want The Safe Keep to win, which is a talk about.
Someone just brought that back to the Athenaeum, Elise did, and she said it was wonderful.
Oh, yeah, I love it so much.
That's actually what I'm going to read next, but then I can't talk about it on the radio. Because you've already got it.
You could tell me what you think of it, though.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting if you, like, hated it or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We can fight.
Okay. To the death.
To the death.
We've got an event happening in the Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute. Next Tuesday, we're having some lunchtime readings by Annie Villas, who used to be on our committee and is a writer who lives in central Otago and has written books and poetry and is currently doing a writing residency at the Robert Lord Cottage in Dunedin, which is such a cute cottage. I've actually, I went there and saw her recently. And
oh, nice.
It's a very cute place, nestled in amongst all the students. But she's going to be reading from a travel memoir, which is based in Venice. And, so the readings start next Tuesday, the 17th, I think it is, at 12:30 p.m. Anyone can come along to that, and there'll be cups of tea. And then the following, she's doing three, and then the following one will be the Tuesday, Wednesday, the following week. They start at 12:30 and just need to come on down to the library on your lunch break and have tea, and you can eat your lunch there too, actually.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, so it should be fun. I think that's kind of, did you have any more booky news?
No.
All right, then.
With that. No, to end on that riveting note.
Yeah, I guess we'll have some exciting new show for you in 2 weeks' time.
Yay.
Fakitay.
Books Uncovered. Exciting conversations about books and literary events. Brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
Join us, Holly and Bella, every second Saturday at 12 p.m. as we dive into themes ranging from romance to quirky book blurbs, all discovered within the depths of the Athenaeum Library.
That's Books Uncovered.
Saturdays at 12 on ORFM and online at oar.org.nz.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.